Welcome to AI, Government and the Future, a podcast by Corner Alliance. We explore the intersection of artificial intelligence, government and the future. We work with government to create results. We ignite your agency's mission by helping you to design and implement high impact and innovative federal programs in AI, broadband, cybersecurity, public safety and more. Being a government ally is at the core of all we do.
All right, welcome back to AI, Government in the Future. I'm your host, Mark Lay, and today we're privileged to welcome Brian Morrison, a distinguished figure in the realm of defense innovation and artificial intelligence. Brian's extensive career spanning over two decades in military intelligence and IT project management has positioned him at the cutting edge of technology and defense. From his early days in the Air Force to his groundbreaking work as the first LLM specialist and liaison at the Department of the Air Force Chief Data and AI Office, Brian has been instrumental in driving forward the adoption of AI within the DoD. His current role as a senior systems engineer at Valancor sees him continuing to push the boundaries, developing sophisticated IT solutions to meet the unique challenges faced by our nation's defense industry. With a passion for efficiency, effectiveness, and a mission-driven mindset, Brian's contributions have significantly shaped the future of our defense industry, technology, and innovation. Welcome, Brian, and thanks for joining us on today's episode.
I'm excited to be here.
Brian, your journey from serving in the military to becoming a leading figure in defense innovation and artificial intelligence is inspiring and remarkable, really. So I wanted to give the audience a little bit of background on your professional experience and would ask you to share maybe what initially sparked your interest in defense technology and AI and how your military service influenced your path towards specializing in these areas.
Just finished up, as you mentioned, 23 and a half years of total military service. I switched off of active duty in the Air Force at about 15 and a half years. And that was my major transition point to innovation inside of the DoD and specifically inside of the Air Force. Starting at that point, I worked a range of assignments, starting off with the headquarters there for ISR Innovations, and then proceeded to work with SOCOM, AFSOC, USAFIAF Africa, ultimately wrapping back around to Air Education Training Command, where I was actually able at that point, after working a wide variety of different innovation-related technology focus areas, to start work on AI. So that was the beginning of last year in 2023, when, of course, that's coinciding with the big boom in generative AI, specifically with the launch of ChatGPT. There was a lot of ongoing projects with generative AI inside the Air Force at that time, to include the Space Force. And one of the things that had not been done up at that point was a broad study across the board at how generative AI use cases could apply to specifically the Department of the Air Force, but also kind of the DoD writ large. So one of the things that I was able to do at that time, working inside of AETC-A9, was formulate and conduct a study specifically looking at that. So, okay, what are the use cases that apply to specific career fields as well as generally overall as common threads to different mission sets that all jobs have?
I was reading a little bit about the DoD's strategy to accelerate the adoption of artificial intelligence and would love to ask her from your perspective, what do you see as some of the most direct or impactful applications of generative AI based on your research and military experience?
So as I mentioned, when we did that study, there were two major things that kind of jumped out as outcomes from that study. Number one, there are absolutely common threads. These mirror a lot of what we see with commercial industry. So anything from administrative duties, back office applications that you would generally see. So the drudgery of daily work, being able to draft documents, being able to answer common questions, all the kind of typical things you would see or and do see today in industry, all those same kind of problems exist. The Air Force, Space Force, and the DoD writ large is a business much like any other in that there are offices, there are computers, there are people working any number of forms to do any number of things, to look up any number of questions. And all those same advantages of the technology and commercial side naturally apply within the defense market. Then there are specific defense-focused applications of the technology itself. Again, really trying to dig down and help discover insights is one of the things that this technology does best. And so it's not necessarily the best thing in terms of replacing a Google search to find the absolute correct answer. But when you're trying to find a unique answer to a question where the answer is not necessarily known, and you want the best tool to help you find the best answer at the time or a good answer quick enough or something in that realm, this is one of those technologies where it's really hard to find anything that's even close to as advantageous to your workflow as almost anything else is.
And that tracks with a lot of our team's use of generative AI tools such as ChatGPT, generating content and kind of onboarding to a problem and acquiring a critical mass of really relevant data to inform better decision-making is kind of a universal application. So I'm glad to hear that it has direct relevance to DoD enterprise and, you know, more mission-specific strategic decision-making as well. Outside of kind of content acquisition, content generation, have you seen any sort of emerging applications that have piqued your interest?
Obviously, I gotta be careful about what I say here. So there are interesting opportunities when applying this type of technology to otherwise very diverse and very historically anyway, difficult to search data sets. So much as I mentioned before, if you don't necessarily know what the right answer is, or you need an aid in searching for or discovering information amongst very diverse, very unstructured data, this is one of those tools that there really is no substitute short of actual human beings being thrown at it. And that's really the most interesting defense use cases for a lot of these heavy analytic jobs where, for lack of a better term, the only solution we've had up to this point is just throwing mass amounts of very specially trained, specialized knowledge bodies at this kind of work. This is the first time where we've actually had a tool that allows us to digitize and scale intelligence, for lack of a better term, at the ability to try to solve these tasks. So where before in whether it's the DGS or any of the other major analytic functions within various organizations, shall we say, this is one of those places where instead of armies of humans trying to find the answer, you can actually apply compute power with this generative AI layer on top of it to help find solutions, which again, what's the biggest problem facing the DoD at this point? Recruiting. So this is literally the only tool that provides an interesting opportunity to help solve that personnel crisis at scale for the kind of near future to midterm.
You touched on some important ethical considerations or ethical boundaries around the use of artificial intelligence. And obviously, defense systems and the entire DoD enterprise is inherently a very sensitive workplace. There's a lot of high-stakes decision-making that's going on there. And there's a tremendous amount of complexity with decision-making and the size of the organization. And that does bring in some complex ethical considerations that need to be accounted for. So I guess from your experience, Brian, how is the DoD balancing the aggressive advancement of AI capabilities with ethical boundaries and accountability mechanisms, or kind of a measured rollout of integrating this with such, you know, high-stakes decision-making?
Well, first and foremost, I can say from firsthand experience, the name of the game is caution and security. If anything, there is more frustration within the Department of the Air Force, or really DoD writ large, at the speed of the rollout. But I can tell you again, firsthand, the primary driving force behind all that is caution and security. There is a lot of bureaucracy that goes into reviewing, approving, and ultimately securing any computer system or any weapon system that's ultimately utilized within the Department of Defense. This technology is no different in terms of the considerations that are given. If anything, it's given extra scrutiny due to the sensitivity and potential that this technology brings writ large to the force. And so the last 2 years, as this technology in the commercial sector has boomed, there has been an equal but very diligent effort on both the policy and security side to make sure that literally any application of this technology within the force is done in a very controlled, very well-planned, very secure way. And so everyone in the department has seen every movie that everybody on the outside has. We've all seen the Terminator. We've all seen Skynet. No one wants that. Literally, no one is trying to go there. And so the question is, okay, with that common social media background, how do we avoid all those tropes from actually coming into place and, heaven forbid, being the ones responsible for it? And so there is a very measured effort through policy to try to make sure that we avoid all the pitfalls and we get to nirvana if we can.
Well, and I guess based on your experience with the Air Force and being someone who's at the forefront of AI implementation, outside of bringing a very cautious and intentional approach to security and responsible rollout, are there additional barriers to adoption of generative AI tools within defense applications that you've noticed outside of that security measure?
The biggest by far is infrastructure. So it's kind of a tag on to security. So if you want something to be secure by default, the answer is you got to have it, as we'd like to refer to, inside the wire. So it needs to be in an infrastructure, whether it's physically resides inside of an actual base, but it needs to be within an infrastructure that meets all regulatory requirements, monitoring, and so on and so forth, that go into getting the requisite level of approval for whatever type of data classification you're trying to operate at, usually referred to at the information levels, whether that's 2 through 5 for what we generally refer to as unclassified, or all the way up to 6 and above for our more sensitive data classifications. Ultimately, all of those things need to be in data centers that are ultimately approved for those types of applications, which means if you want to run generative AI, you have to have, generally speaking, very heavy stacks of GPUs in a significant number, ran by very well-trained people. All of that takes money. All of that money takes time and infrastructure improvements and all those kinds of things. And so 2024, aside from policy, has also been a big build-out year. Microsoft was the first to kind of come out and announce that they were bringing very large GPU compute over to their IL5 through 7 approved data centers. So that'll be the first major upgrade that we've seen thus far. AWS already had a lot going on previously with their compute stacks, so that wasn't as GPU heavy and focused as the Microsoft piece, where again, I would fully expect to see them battle it out with Microsoft over the ensuing years. But again, 2024 is really the big build out year for infrastructure. And then you have the component side within the military and the DoD for policy. And so really it all shapes up for 2025, whether that's fiscal year or calendar year 25, ultimately being the kind of culmination of both policy to allow you to do a thing and infrastructure supporting your ability to implement that thing to actually bring capabilities at scale to the force. So again, there's prototypes that exist today and they have limited approval and limited hardware to kind of run on, but for everybody's ability to kind of reach out and touch something that's generative AI related and really make a big impact, that's probably going to be somewhere in 2025.
In addition to developing policy, building that infrastructure, getting a better handle on the backend requirements associated with generative AI applications, I'm sure is of interest, you know, understanding how you build that future-proof infrastructure for kind of the long term. In addition to some of those policy infrastructure gaps, any other operational impacts that generative AI has introduced that people may have not been thinking about in previous years that are changing the game within Air Force operations or additional use cases that we haven't identified?
Oh, sure. I mean, really, one of the most surprising, and then we actually got an amazing opportunity that we got to see demonstrated this week, was at NVIDIA's conference. So a lot of people kind of up to maybe 3-4 months ago, maybe a little bit further back, really regarded large language models as this textual operation of this thing we were going to use to generate just text. No one really thought about their applications of that technology into other domains. And one of the things we saw literally from the keynote speech from the NVIDIA CEO this week is generative AI has a lot more applications, especially in robotics. And I've got a good friend who's a senior engineer over there, and you would be absolutely amazed. I mean, truly to the point of, if you want to talk about Terminators and Skynet, like you can very clearly see that arc kind of coming in terms of where this technology can go relative to autonomous robots. But that's the kind of key thing here is generative AI is really more about unlocking intelligence at scale. And so where would you want to put intelligence? Naturally, if you're going to manifest it in the physical world, it's going to be more than just interacting with it on computer screens. It's going to be interacting with it through some other kind of mechanical means, in which case robotics are the first platform there. So where we used to kind of regard autonomy completely separate from generative AI, we're realizing now that those are kind of converging paths. And that's another thing that we'll probably see not only evolve in the commercial market, but as we kind of go through 25, 26, 27 and further out, we'll start to see that emergence of those technologies together to really have, again, some really amazing effects. Because again, the DoD has always been at the forefront of autonomous weapons systems. And again, going back to the recruiting crisis, there's any number of reasons why, even outside of direct war fighting, we might want to have robots assisting in logistics, assisting in medical means, even just cleaning up a dirty hangar. I mean, like there's a million applications for automated robotics that would be extremely useful and help offset otherwise manual labor by physical people. So again, a very interesting application of technology that we're just at the very early days of.
I think it's great that there's a synergy between the commercial industry, you know, advancements of AI supported hardware, AI applications, and based on a lot of in commercial industry or in the civilian space, a lot of previously non-compute or communications intensive industries, traditionally automotive manufacturing, critical infrastructure at the city or state level, they're having to outfit their hardware or capabilities with communications and computing assets. And so I was wondering if the DoD or the Air Force has seen any sort of cross-domain convergence of generative AI applications. The DoD operates on land, air, sea, space, cyberspace. Are there opportunities to find commonalities between generative AI applications that might redefine joint operations or general warfare strategies from your perspective?
Absolutely. Being able to unlock intelligence at scale is a really interesting opportunity. One of the first places we actually saw, going back to the early days of kind of ChatGPT and early last year, one of the first major use cases that cropped up for a lot of people was creativity and planning assistance. So everything from how do we write this operational plan to new ways to potentially go after hard logistics challenges. Again, anything that would basically facilitate a better answer to a complex question. Because remember, again, before that point, you just tried to gather as many smart people and or experienced people in a room and just literally think with a whiteboard about a hard problem and come up with whatever the best answer that smart group of people could. Now you have a way to take all the best information we have, all the best interviews, all the best lessons learned, all the best current information, and then just keep stacking and stacking further and further that amount of aggregated knowledge we have. And then again, applying more and more and better analytics and compute against it to hopefully come up with one or a range of answers against any number of hard problems. And again, as much as you mentioned, war fighting is a team sport and it's always a joint exercise, especially for the US military. And so no one I know of in the DoD is thinking about the application of generative AI in a myopically kind of self-centered view. It is always, how do I help it solve my problems? But ultimately understanding that my problems are part of this larger structure. And so how are all these things integrating together? Also, because of how big the infrastructure requirements are for even supporting the current range of these technologies, let alone the future ones, the applications of these technologies are going to take on the form of platform capabilities, most likely at first, in which case, again, just due to expense of all that, these things will likely be done at major command level, headquarters level, and then ultimately in a joint service kind of methodology. If everybody's going to use the same platform, why not just have this service account, that service account, and so on and so forth on the same platform versus that service has their thing, this service has that one. Again, there's all kinds of economies of scale and synergies here that are absolutely being looked at. One of the things that we've seen with OSD's Task Force Lima is a great unifying effort around trying to streamline a lot of these conversations.
And Brian, you touched on kind of the intersection of artificial intelligence with human capital. And I think that on previous episodes, we've talked a lot about, you know, the need for civilian workforce, whether you're an office worker or otherwise, embracing some of these generative AI tools to increase productivity and maintaining a posture that, you know, maintaining a human in the loop to either leverage the outputs of generative AI tools for more informed decision making or any number of additional applications is going to be an important perspective to take. And the human aspect is crucial in military operations as well. Is generative AI already impacting Air Force or DoD workforce needs or specific roles or reassignments within defense teams? Anything like that that you can speak to?
Not yet, but it is definitely a consideration for the horizon because again, 2023 was the aha year. 2024 is the policy and build out year, and 2025 is really the implementation year, if you want to think of it in simple terms. Until you get to the implementation period, you're really not going to have major impacts in terms of realignment of personnel. But as a simple example, when I was in ATC and we were doing the initial study on the use cases, one of the first groups we got specifically told to look at potential use cases the technology could support was recruiting. If you think about the commercial sector and all the different applications of generative AI, one of the big implementations of that into various markets is in marketing. Well, all the great things that you can use generative AI for to facilitate marketing, that's what recruiting is fundamentally. It is, we are marketing a job, a lifestyle, an organization to a specific cohort. And so all the great things that generative AI can do with marketing there, it can also serve those same types of functions to assist recruiters. And recruiting has, regardless of year, every single instance of recruiting has always been a hard sell and hard to recruit recruiters into that field, let alone train them and get them to operate at a high level of efficiency. So we already know for a fact, just due to the less sensitive nature of that job, that is, we already know recruiters are utilizing that as best they can with existing policies, utilizing that technology to kind of help themselves make good social media posts, help reach in and write various email outreach campaigns and all those kinds of things. Fully expect to see that kind of evolve into the future. But again, I think we're at least a few years out from seeing AI replace or fully kind of offset whole jobs. If anything, it's going to be taking the limited personnel that we have and kind of regardless of existing capability level, just amplify whatever current level they're at even higher. So if you were a bottom 10% person, no derogatory nature meant there, but if you were a bottom 10% person, guess what? With the application of this technology, now you're mid-level. And if you were mid-level, now you're operating at the top 10%. And so on and so forth. And that's the big advantage here is you can take all the best capabilities you would have really expected out of a top performer, and you can literally, with the application of software, provide them at a one-button access to literally your entire workforce. So it raises the bar uniformly for everybody.
Brian, well said. I mean, I think that we've used ChatGPT and other generative AI tools, like I mentioned before, for content onboarding for folks operating in a new, you know, civilian mission space or industry and trying to learn some of the operational considerations or trends and drivers affecting their client or their organization's operating picture. I think leveraging some of these tools for training purposes, or as you mentioned, in terms of a top performer, providing prototypical training data to inform the development and continuous improvement of relevant prompts for generative AI tools. There's certainly a positive reinforcement feedback loop there that has a lot of exciting, you know, potential benefits for workforce development within the defense environment and within the civilian workforce as well. I guess in terms of government's role supporting AI innovation, and I guess we can start maybe with the international perspective, the race for AI superiority is not confined to the United States, neither is warfighting or defense innovation. How does international collaboration or competition in generative AI influence Air Force or DoD strategies? I guess, are there any lessons learned, cautionary tales that you and your teams have taken to heart when observing international advancements in AI that you could bring to bear here in the United States?
One of the biggest things is U.S. military has been involved in combined operations with various foreign partners through any number of operations across the years. So we're well experienced in terms of multinational warfare in any sense. There's all kinds of lessons learned that come out of that. Chief among them is you want to plan early and often, especially with your friends. And so we've been in conversations since the very early days of getting started with machine learning, let alone now with generative AI. And we also understand, especially when you look at all major Western countries, but especially Five Eyes partners, their militaries operate so similar to ours. Now, obviously, they may have different equipment, but in terms of the functions, they're near peers. And so they have essentially the same use cases within their military departments as we do. And so there's an opportunity there, whether that's through utilizing common data structures, utilizing common analytical platform capabilities and all those types of things that kind of go into that, into leveraging the economies of scale that any of those countries have to offer. So like case in point, one of the best commercial generative AI model developers out there today is Mistral. Mistral's based out of France. France happens to be one of the major NATO partners. And so there's a lot of potential usage of the French Mistral models for potential NATO applications. There's also the opportunity for utilizing different US-based commercial assets with different NATO partners. And the great thing about this technology is because the literal bleeding edge of this technology development is being done in the commercial space, and it's not necessarily, especially outside of the actual core model development itself, but especially like the larger generative AI system building, there's nothing particularly unique or special about the United States other than maybe scale for this going on. So we see just as much cutting edge development being done in all the major Western countries. And so there's a great opportunity for any military department to be able to kind of stand up their own applications across common use cases. And then as a larger integrated cohort, having whether it's NATO, Five Eyes, or individual country partnerships, to be able to look across their combined set of country capabilities to kind of cherry pick the best opportunities and best capabilities that they may want to apply to whatever warfighting looks like. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be direct warfighting applications. It could be everything from just how we facilitate logistics as things transit from one country to the next and so on and so forth. Again, intelligence at scale provides an almost unlimited number of use cases and applications. And it's about just making sure that you're picking the right things, not necessarily picking the only things.
No, I think that's an important point. And, you know, my point of view is that defining well-developed problems to solve and then developing kind of an ensemble of generative AI tools to solve those problems is a key role for humans in the loop for generative AI integration with operational decision-making and businesses and defense applications as well. So I think that's well said. So, I mean, I think we're in agreement that private industry and the private sector is driving a lot of really fast-moving generative AI innovation, and the DoD and the Air Force obviously has tremendous R&D capabilities kind of in-house. How do you see civilian federal agencies playing a role in supporting AI advancements, and if any at all? And if so, what does that role look like from your perspective?
That's a really interesting question. Honestly, my personal opinion is it's going to wildly evolve over time. I think it'll be driven primarily by the simple fact that as this technology develops, let's take it over the next kind of 1 to 5 and then 5 to 10 year period. So over the next 1 to 5 year period, by most leading estimates by major companies kind of working this technology in the field, everyone more or less agrees that we're probably not going to see artificial general intelligence within that time frame, or maybe right at the edge of that time frame, in which case you're looking at a normal technology adoption curve to some extent. So you have commercial companies develop products. Those products are evaluated against various commercial or military or governmental use cases. They're acquired through the normal means and so on and so forth. And so things might develop rapidly, but they're ultimately being integrated in through a normal set of processes. You jump forward to the next 5 to 10 years, if we get to a point, and again, all leading experts say more or less, we're going to get there probably at least 5 years out, somewhere in maybe 10 to 15 years, but somewhere in that 5 to 10, maybe 5 to 15 year period, we're going to reach a point where somebody, and it's going to be somebody by all measures right now in the commercial space, that is going to develop artificial general intelligence. Once you reach that point, it is not a far leap to go to artificial superintelligence. Now, just pause for a second and think about what that means. If you go and look at anybody's estimation of what artificial general intelligence would be capable of, let alone artificial superintelligence, you have to at least acknowledge the fact that that capability will be somewhat on par in terms of impact, not necessarily physical, but in any number of other ways, will be similar to any measure other technological offset technology. So whether that's stealth technology, nuclear power, so on and so forth, that will have been developed by a commercial company. Regardless of whatever country that company is in, what is the government of that country supposed to do? Are they supposed to just let a civilian organization control that? Let's just assume it's somebody in the United States. Okay, well, we don't let nuclear power be controlled outside of the government. So just going on this thought experiment for a second, how is the government supposed to exercise control over that? By statute, it can't be the DoD because that's Title 10 and we are restricted from operating inside the borders of the country without, you know, explicit so on and so forth. So it'd have to be one of the federal organizations. Is that going to be FBI, Department of Commerce? How does all that kind of factor in? All those questions will have to be addressed in some kind of way if any kind of hand of government, if you will, wants to intercede in literally any way. Now, obviously, in theory, none of this will be a surprise. We're working very closely, monitoring all those kinds of things, any of the commercial developments. So it shouldn't be somebody knocks on the door one day and says, hey, check this out. So we'll see these things coming. And ultimately, through the executive order that came out from the White House not too long ago, you see the government starting to take a very active step in understanding that this reality is going to happen. It is coming. And there are steps we're going to need to take in a very measured way to make sure when that day does arrive, as best we can be, everyone is prepared. And so it's really, what does the path look like from here to there? It's going to be windy. It's going to be very heavily debated. And then we have any number of administrations and governmental changeovers and political implications to all of those things. So, you know, that ancient Chinese proverb of may you live in interesting times is an absolute full effect, especially over the next 5 to 10 years.
Sounds like you want to future-proof your federal civilian agency positioning and develop some policies that look towards that general or super intelligence from a generative AI perspective. Related to that evolution on a 0 to 5, 5 to 10 year timeline, are there any particular ethical frameworks or guidelines that you think are particularly relevant for navigating or bringing some level of clarity to that transition?
Within the DoD right now, again, policy still being written, so none of it's finalized. The biggest kind of overarching one will come out from OSD later in the year, maybe as late as January of next year. They're specifically looking at three different risk management frameworks as it applies to the ethical side of evaluating both the technologies, its application to use cases, and so on. Again, I don't want to go too much into detail on that, other than to say they are very well established, kind of the leading frameworks in the space. Ultimately, they're each being evaluated for their individual applications and values. We may see the availability to pick one or multiple of these things, you know, kind of a, with a shared benchmark standard, or we may see kind of the best of each, you know, combined into a new future framework. But yes, absolutely, number one, there are some leading frameworks that are being considered, and we may see an evolution of those by the time we see final policy kind of released later, hopefully this year. But ultimately, everyone is taking ethics, especially with this technology, extremely seriously, to the point to where we have chief AI ethics officers for individual services now, let alone the applicable policy supporting frameworks for those positions. So it's one of the first times we've seen major ethical considerations before the technology has even been applied to the battlefield, let alone had any kind of dramatic effect on the battlefield.
So as we kind of near the end of our conversation, Brian, I want to look at the, or ask you about the legacy you hope to leave within the defense and AI communities. I guess, given your recent work and where you're headed over the next several years, you know, what impact do you wish your work and innovations will have on the future of defense technology and the broader mission of national security?
For me, my personal goal was always to just try and work on hard, difficult problems that other people didn't necessarily find a huge interest in, because those were usually the problems that got kind of left by the wayside and were important to some, but usually not enough to really get solved. And so I ultimately understand that a lot of the projects I worked, as niche as they may have been, if I or others like me hadn't had taken the time to devote to helping solve those problems or at least work on them, they never would have been worked. So it may be a bit of hubris to say that I always tried to be the champion for the little guy or the lesser considered problem or something like that, but that was always where I tried to direct my career, was always to do the unusual thing, always to take path less traveled, try to always work on something new, not necessarily the newest, the hottest, the sexiest thing that was always out there, because there's always plenty of people working on that stuff. But there's not always somebody going into the dark corners, working on the very hard things that are slow and complicated and bureaucratic and political, because that's just not fun stuff to do. But if you're willing to do the not sexy, unfun stuff, and you're willing, most importantly, to work at it over and over again, regardless of effect, day after day, eventually, you can make a real positive impact, even if it's just for a small group. But you'd be surprised. It usually ends up being a lot more people than you expect. And I've had the absolute honor and privilege to get to do that, as well as have that honor and privilege afford me the opportunity to work with some of the absolute most amazing people in the entire world, let alone the defense industry. And honestly, that's been the best and biggest honor of my career, is not what I got to do. It was the people I got to work with. And that has been absolutely amazing. And I view as the greatest gift I ever got in my career.
As we close, looking at any advice that you may have for aspiring innovators, what advice would you give to aspiring engineers, policymakers looking to kind of get a foothold in the AI space and work to drive some of the innovations and value creation offered by generative AI tools? How can the next generation contribute meaningfully to this ever-evolving and quick-moving industry that we work in?
The biggest lesson I've had from over the years, because again, I've got a chance to work in a range of different technologies, and I can tell you for a fact, one thing is absolutely true. Most people will tell you, when looking at whatever the new hotness is in terms of technology of the day, they will tell you, oh, well, I can't really make the big dent because insert event or time frame here, I came too late. It's already past the point of taking off and I can't do this or I can't do that. And they'll come up with a range of excuses. If anything holds true, it's simply this. There is always some new technological evolution, some new technology, some new opportunity, some new organization, any number of things that are going to happen tomorrow, the next day, the day after that. All you have to do is be willing to do the hard work. That is simply it. Not the cool work, not the sexy work, not the thing that gives you all the money and all the success, but just be willing to do the hard thing are hard sayings that most other people aren't, and you will be amazed at the opportunities that come your way. Because most people that are in a position of power or resource to be able to work on those problems or any problems of any significance are simply looking for folks who can join the team and do good work. Not necessarily the smartest, the best, or whatever, or the best pedigree. They're just looking for people who can play on a team and play well with others. And so that all comes down to just being willing to do the work.
I'm curious, actually, is there any sort of publications related to the research and kind of surveying that you and your team did for the generative AI application research that we talked through? Or is that obviously still under wraps?
I get that question quite often from more people internal to the DoD than you would ever possibly imagine. So the short answer is sort of, I guess, is the best way to put it. So the study was originally scoped to be 6 months long. We tried, both because of the existing policy limitations and everything at the time, we tried to keep everything as absolutely unclassified as we could because most of the stuff we were using at the time was commercial-based anyway. So there's a lot of PowerPoint presentations that ultimately are completely unclassified. They haven't been officially approved for public release, but would be a relatively trivial thing because there's literally nothing classified in them at all to get them approved for wider public release. So now, again, I don't personally own or control any of them, so I can't do any of that work because I'm out of the government from that perspective. But it would be a simple request for any of those documents, whether it was to ATT or to DAF CDAO, like they all have, or even OSD CDAO, they all have access to all that material. Well, it can be requested, but ultimately it's on them. They haven't thus far released a lot of it. There was debate whether or not there was going to be kind of a larger research paper kind of written on all those kinds of things, whether there was going to be a follow-up study and so on and so forth. But as you can imagine, they're still at a point right now where they don't even have policy out yet. And that's been like the biggest gripe that everybody has because the Department of the Air Force is leaning the furthest forward. They're kind of projecting somewhere in the, let's call it, well, we're already in March, but March to about probably mid-year, so June, July timeframe for when they're going to release their generative AI system approval policy. So that's the bigger expansion of policy that allows people to actually get a generative AI system approved outside of just an interim authority test. So an actual approval for widespread operation. And then OSD is actually kind of further behind that. They're projecting somewhere between September of this year and January of next year. So again, you can kind of see how all these policy things, as I was talking about on the recording, how all these policy things kind of align in 24, and like all bureaucratic things, they all slip to the right. You add on top of all of that, the reality that we're in a presidential election year, which we are playing the normal CR, you know, continuing resolution game every year anyway, but because it's a presidential election year, we are absolutely guaranteed to be in a CR for 2025, if not get extended even longer after that, because of God knows what happens with that. So you'll have policy and infrastructure in place in 24, but when you take into account all the political ramifications of things that are going to happen the back end of this year, it will probably be, gosh, deep into calendar year 25 before kind of major funding is unlocked. Like right now, if you look at the headlines, we're just now in March getting to a point where we're going to get, hopefully soon, kind of full budgetary release for the federal government. And so that's when the CR restrictions lift, even though the money's there for the DoD. So you're probably next year talking about April or May, and that's being conservative, honestly. So you kind of get the idea here. I mean, it could be the back half of fiscal 25, let alone the back half of calendar 25, before you see a large enough budget to actually purchase at scale, whether it's licenses, hardware, or any combination thereof to kind of do major efforts. So in terms of like major operational deployment of stuff, I mean, it could be 26 before you see that kind of thing. And then of course you have what happens with near peer conflicts and all those kinds of things that just layers all these things on top of it. And of course, none of the technology development slows down during that period either. So yeah, it's just a lot of really interesting converging issues all coming together at the same time. So really what I'm looking forward, I say forward, what I'm nervously anxious about, I guess you could say, is really what happens between 2026 and let's call it 2030, because that's when kind of everything hits a crescendo, whether it's political tensions, whether it's geopolitical tensions, technology development, all of those things kind of really all converge at that. And so that's the interesting question mark for everybody.
Great. Thank you, Brian. I think that's a great place to end. Well, we really appreciate your time and look forward to a conversation in the future at some point, and we'll be monitoring your work moving forward. Brian, thanks again and great conversation. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
AI, Government, and the Future is brought to you by Corner Alliance. To find out more about Corner Alliance and how we work with government to create results, visit our website at corneralliance.com and then make sure to search for AI Government Future in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found, and click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Corner Alliance, thanks for listening.